Season 5, Episode 2, All's Wells That Ends Wells.
All's Well That Ends Wells?
Yes, it's a play on one of the characters' names that we're going to find out soon. Episode opens up with Simone and Sipowicz heading to a bar where there's a DOA. A gentleman was running out of the bar. They school the uniform cops in basic detective work by telling them you should have stopped all the patrons of the bar from drinking so they're not drunk when we ask them questions.
Yeah, because some dude comes to the door, and is, like, lit.
That dude who comes to the door, Kyle, fancy you should mention him. I watched this episode with our father, Papa Asher, and he shouted when that guy got to the door, who's slurring, "That guy's in This Is Us." And then we looked it up. His name is Ron Cephas Jones, or Cephas.
Uh-huh.
He plays the grandfather on This Is Us, and he said, "Make sure that you use it, and tell people that it was I, Papa Asher, who knew that he was the guy from This Is Us." And I said, "Don't worry, I'll mention it." He's like, "Well, if you choose not to mention, you just don't want to notice my brilliance." Papa Asher noticed the guy in the beginning was Ron Cephas Jones, who plays some dude on This Is Us. The grandfather is what I was told. Now that I've done that...
Now that you've done your due diligence.
Exactly. They head into the bar after schooling the uniform officers. Don't let them keep drinking after a homicide, because then they'll be drunk when we ask them questions. Also, the guy running out had like $40 on him, and they said a guy would die for $40. He's like, "Well, have you seen his shoes? $40 means a lot to this guy." They go in.
Yeah, that's all very weird.
It was extra effort on details that weren't necessary.
Yeah.
When they go into the bar, what they're hearing is that a couple of guys, well, three guys came in to rob them and were throwing guns around and robbing the bar and wanting everybody's valuables. And then they shot the guy who ran away and then left. But the patrons are having arguments over the details, like the color of the hat, stupid shit like that. The patrons and the bartender, you might notice their faces. The woman patron was the same lady who played the crackhead in that episode of Always Sunny about health insurance.
Yeah.
I knew I recognized her face, so I was like, what the hell was she in? And it was that episode of Always Sunny. She played the crackhead where they go, "You see, this is what happens, and this is what you look like when you don't have health insurance."
Oh my god, I completely forgot about that.
And the guy behind the bar, the bartender, he's a famous face because he played Michael Jordan's dad in Space Jam. For all the Space Jam heads out there. All the Monstars, if you will.
Kirk, why do you keep talking like this?
I don't know, Kyle. There's a lot of talking between all the customers, and everybody's getting slightly more pissed off because they're drunk, and they're not paying attention, and they're not helping the detectives. And Sipowicz looks at Simone and says, "You're going to tell me you missed this?" And Simone said, "You'd have to beat it out of me." And then we cut to the theme song. And this is NYPD Blue Balls, where me, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. This is the theme song to NYPD Blue. When we come back from
they're coming for you, NYPD Blue.
What the fuck was that?
The theme song.
When we come back, there's a woman brutally recounting her rape. Not a fun thing to come back to.
Huh?
She's telling Russell that it was this white guy who, raped her. I don't want to get into the details. It's not necessary. All they have is that it's a white guy with stubble, and he has a hoop earring. That's basically it. It's a pretty sad story because it's this woman saying she's probably not even going to live in New York anymore because of the encounter and may go back to Providence, Rhode Island.
Rhode Island.
Neither a road nor an island discuss. And that's the end of that conversation. It's just recounting the rape, and then it's sad, and there's tears. There's a guy who comes into the house who was at the bar shooting. His name's Will Bartlett.
Comes in on the sly.
You know what? It's interesting that you say that. His nickname is Sly.
What?
Yeah, we'll get back to that in a second. Let's cover the rape stuff first. Just get it out of the way.
I like to savor the rape. Can we,
Okay. I might have to cut that out. Just because I don't want there to be a single thing you can cut out that is more horrible than that from your voice.
Clicks, bro. That's what we need.
So when Russell and Martinez get back from talking to that woman about the rape, they have it on good authority that this is one of three rapes that happened in the same hotel. So Fancy gets Jill...
Isn't it like second hand where fucking Metavoy's like, oh, I think three other rapes have happened here.
No. What happens is when Russell and Martinez come back, Fancy's the one that goes, well, that's only 2 weeks since the last one and a month before that, so they're happening more frequently. So then he goes to Jill and Metavoy's eating pastries, and says, we've had another rape in that same hotel, so you guys are going to chill in it with, what is it called, surveillance, and watch over the hotel.
Yes.
Next time we see him, Kirkendall and Metavoy are in one room, and Russell and Martinez are in another, I guess on different floors, that's the assumption, and they're watching the cameras, and Metavoy starts going into a conversation about coffee that Jill didn't want to have, where Metavoy's like, I think I'm going to get some coffee, and Jill's like, could you get me one too? And then Metavoy just starts talking about coffee, about how he prefers coffee, about how Abby is upset that she has to get off coffee.
Because Metavoy's a fucking weirdo, dude.
Because Metavoy just like, keeps talking.
Metavoy's that dude at work that like everyone tolerates, but like can't be alone with. You know what I mean? Like, you can't be alone in a room with them.
Because they'll just talk your ear off and then annoy you to death.
Yeah. So, like, you always have to have it, like, in a public space or, like, a space where, like, if they do start talking, you have an out. Like, you just always got to make sure that you're never alone with them in a room.
While he's having that conversation with her, a guy comes in and, like, starts following a woman, and they have their eyes on him, and then he goes for her and grabs her from behind, and they, you know, they threaten to shoot him and then beat him up and then take him into custody.
Well, it's weird because, like, Greg gets, like, really excited.
Well, yeah, man. He's about to actually get to do something. After they get that attacker back to the house, he's saying he's not a rapist. He was just going to steal her bag. And they happen to be on the hotel, so that's what they saw. But he's not a rapist. He's a lover, as he says. And he's into consensible sex, which is not a word. And he...
they should arrest this guy off of personality alone.
Just bad personality as the charge?
Like, the way he acts and, like, how smug and, like, douchey he is, he should just be arrested for that.
It holds up, because when they bring back his sheet, he has committed a lot of theft, but he hasn't raped anybody. And that's his argument. He's like, look, I'm a thief, but I'm not a rapist. And so they take
I just steal their shit. I don't violate them, sexually.
They grab a Polaroid of him to take to the hospital, and on the way back, Russell mentions, like, she doesn't think it's him. And Jill did some detective work and looked up sex offenders from Jersey. And there's a guy who looks a little bit like their suspect, and he works as a dishwasher very close by. So they go to pick him up, and they bring him in, and see if I can find his name.
Like, that isn't that kind of like a big leap?
Yeah, I mean,
isn't
just
that like...
Like
a big leap? Like, Jill, all like out of nowhere, Jill's like, oh, I got the... I just randomly did this.
I randomly thought I should check Jersey and see what they have. And then this guy kind of looks like our guy. Maybe we should go get him. Well, they bring him in, and his name's Hauser. I think it was Stanhauser. I didn't write his first name.
It's not Hauser?
No, not Hauser. He's not Canadian. Oh, Stanley Hauser. And they bring him in, and he's an idiot from moment one. He's a total mouth breather. And he's pissing off Russell, and Russell's pissing him off. Because she's asking him, like, what he did with his night. And he's getting more and more upset by answering those questions.
Well, because they keep doing that cop thing where, like, they ask a question that you have to admit, like, you were either doing something or you were somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then when you commit to it, the next person then goes, like, asks a specific. I mean, it doesn't give you time to think. So, like, they'll be like, oh, what'd you do? And he's like, I went to the movies. What'd you see? And then he like stumbles. He's like, well, and then that's how you get people. Because if like if you went to the movies and you know what you saw, you wouldn't have like you know you'd be ready to go. And they do that tactic on him, and I think he gets annoyed by it.
He basically gets walked into a confession by Martinez. Because the guy is kind of like, could she leave, please? Kind of like, I can't deal with this woman in the room, like, harshing my mellow because I'm a rapist.
And yeah, that was really weird.
When she leaves, Martinez is like, yeah, imagine a jury of 12 women. They're going to put you away. But a male judge, he'll understand rape. He sees rapists all the time. So he'll get it. He'll understand.
That was a very, very weird, like, conversation.
Because the idea that you... I mean, a detective kind of has to do that, where he has to pretend like he has a different set of values. But Martinez was like, look, man, sometimes you get drunk, you get a little crazy, you commit 3 rapes over a couple of months. Things happen.
I mean, look at Martinez. He knocked up a 19-year-old.
That was consensual, Kyle. It's different. And she's 19. She's legal.
That was gross, Kirk.
What?
She's 19. She's legal.
I mean, that's our laws. That's not me.
You're 30.
Okay, we don't need to mention people's ages. We don't need to. We don't need to go around mentioning the ages of people on the show.
Well, there's only 2 of us. You're 30. I'm 4 years older than you. So do the math.
You're rule 34. That guy who they had beforehand, Barry, he gets led off out of that room because it turns out he's not the rapist. And Martinez just is like, yeah, we're gonna charge you with all the theft, and then we're gonna look at you anytime there's a theft of a dog. And then
because he had on his file extortion of a dog.
Larceny of a dog.
Larceny of a dog, yeah. Not extortion. Unless he extorts, like, kibbles and bits or something.
I don't know how you extort a full dog. He then has a really terrible ADR line, Martinez does, where he just goes, and I'm getting married. Because in the middle of this episode, Martinez and Gina agree to get married. And then it just gets, like, shotgunned at the end of this wedding. Maybe we should spend more time on it, but it's really awkward, and it makes me uncomfortable.
They even kind of say, like, he even kind of says, like, hey, like, maybe we should have, like, a real wedding. And she's like, no, it doesn't matter what, like, about our families. It's what we have, like, what we want. It's our wedding. Like, I just want to be married to you. And it was, like, 3 days ago, you ran to your mom's. Because
you're 19. Yeah, towards the beginning of this episode, Gina just, like, walks up to him in the middle of the squad room and is like, I want to accept your proposal.
Yeah, like, so random.
And he's like, you just made me the happiest man in America. And everybody is just walking around doing their jobs. Like, it's a normal day at work, except they're about to get married. And then Martinez starts throwing thumbs up to Medavoy. And then Medavoy throwing thumbs up all over the joint. And then there's a moment where Medavoy keeps gesturing to Gina and then to Martinez, who left the room, and going thumbs up to Sipowicz. And Sipowicz doesn't really know what he's talking about.
I don't know if it was Medavoy and Martinez gaying out and thumbs upping each other, or Cohen's back wave goodbye.
Which is the worst gesture?
Which is, like, the worst gesture. It's pretty ridiculous.
I honestly think Cohen's is worse. No, not Cohen's. I think that the Medavoy-Martinez thing is worse, because it's involving the entire office with something that it's like, okay, we shouldn't be doing this here, this is ridiculous. While Cohen's thing is just trying to be cute to one person, and another person might end up seeing it.
True. And then that other person might just, and then if someone randomly sees him doing it, they might just think, like, what is this fucking weirdo doing?
Whereas Martinez and Medavoy's thing is like, let's get the entire office involved in this thing that we're probably supposed to be just quiet about.
Like, they act like 2 frat bros who just won, like, a beer pong game.
Thumbs up, man, we're going to Nationals over at Kappa Kappa Do. I don't know the
Kappa
fucking
Kappa name. Douchefuck. PC over at the PC, Kappa Kappa PC.
PC! Oh my gosh, I rewatched those episodes. PC Principal is the fucking greatest. I love PC Principal so much. Just to continue with the James and Gina stuff, they meet up about halfway through the rape storyline, and James and Gina kind of go like, oh man, I wish I could marry you right now. And James is like, well, I can make that happen. And this is right after he said, yeah, this guy definitely assaulted a woman, but we don't think he did the earlier rapes. And she's like, I wish I could be married to you right now. Okay, that's a tone shift. That's a real tone shift right there, talking about assaults and rapes.
Oh, that's what makes me think she's like a 19-year-old and like isn't like grasping the situations or like what she's in.
And yeah, then he brings her to their honeymoon suite, which looks like some broke ass shit. It looks pretty terrible.
Took her like to Motel 6 and shit.
And he carries her over the threshold. They get to the bed. She starts taking off his tie and opening his shirt. And then she takes off her, like, wedding gown / muumuu thing that she's wearing. And she goes, well, now we're married so I can undress in front of you. And I was like, oh, yeah, he can put a baby inside you, but you can't get undressed in front of him.
Well, you know what God said, Kirk. You can put a dick inside a woman, but you can't see her take the clothes off.
He's never said that, Kyle. I'm pretty sure he's never said that.
Well, they're both super Catholic, and supposedly they follow the rules of Catholicism, so based off their actions, that's what I figured out.
Because that's the thing. They didn't wear condoms, and they're not getting an abortion. That's how you know.
And they're Hispanic. I mean, come on.
Also, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to ask you point blank, and I want your honest answer. Can you have sex with a woman who's pregnant? I can't. I don't think I could. I don't think I could. It's not even a gross thing. Like, oh, she's gross. It's a, I'm too scared of what could happen down there. Even though I know nothing could happen.
Wait. Like, bigger question. What do you think could happen?
Well, I don't want to put my penis into an area where a child is also. Even if it's not going to get close enough, it's weird.
Your dick has to be, like, the size of Porzingis, Kirk.
Yeah, it's the unicorn. What's your point?
Shut the fuck up. Fuck you. Fuck you. You are not supposed to know that reference.
You know what? You're just mad because I'm rocking a Porzingis and you're rocking a Doncic. It's fine. It's okay.
Oh, you mean like the Serbian Larry Bird? Yeah, I'll rock that all day, bitch.
Yeah, not very tall.
No, mine's more like Kawhi Leonard. They call it the Claw.
This spiraled in a different direction than I thought it was. And you also
weird.
You also didn't answer my question. Would you have sex with a pregnant woman then?
Well, I'm assuming the pregnant woman is like my wife, so it wouldn't bother me, no.
Okay, I don't think I could do it.
Because I know biologically, like, it's all good. Like, read a book, dude.
I know it's not going to do anything. It's just like, weird.
Go to a science class, bro.
It's just weird. I can't wrap my brain around it. And shut up. I know it doesn't do anything. It's just, I don't know, it's weird to me.
I know, it's just funny. I don't know, I crack myself up, man.
It's just weird in my brain. But yeah, they also bed down, and then there's this weird moment where, like, they start kissing, and then it looks like they're not even face-to-face. Like, they're like they told each other, let's just pretend we're kissing when we get to the bed. But really, we're just putting our faces next to each other.
Yeah, because I think she's, like, 18 or 19, and so they want to make sure that they don't do something that gets them in trouble.
Well, that's the end of their story. They end with they're married and they're boning at a shitty hotel.
And boy, is it a boring story.
Yeah, it's like shoved in between all the stuff that's actually happening. The main story with the bar shooting, this guy named Will Bartlett shows up, and I wanted to, maybe I can bring it up here. The reason I mentioned that it was weird that you said sly, also just so I have everybody on the same page, the bartender was Tom Berry, who played Michael Jordan's dad in Space Jam. The woman who played the crackhead and on It's Always Sunny, and the bar patron was Sonia Jackson. But the guy who played Will Bartlett, you said he came in real sly. His real name is Billy Sly Williams.
No, his real name is Billy Williams, and his nickname is Sly.
No, his parents named him Billy Sly Williams. I'm pretty sure it doesn't matter. The point is, it's just weird that you said Sly, and it turns out his nickname is Sly. Anyway, he comes in with a sick Kangol hat backwards, because he's smooth, and he...
Shit, dude.
He goes, There was another.
I don't think the Kangol really got like popular until Fred Durst. You know.
I thought it was. I thought it was when Samuel L. Jackson started rocking them. In
yeah,
public.
That was right around the time you know he bought that Limp Bizkit album.
Yeah, Samuel L. Jackson was loving $3 bill and chocolate starfish and the hot dog flavored water.
Okay, you missed like their biggest hit, but
well, and cool. What's that? Significant other?
Other, bro.
Okay, fine.
No, you're new metal. Shit.
Will Bartlett comes in to let the guys know that there was another guy in the bar who actually shot the dude. It wasn't the guys robbing the place. It was a Rikers Island CO for corrections officer, Emmett Purcell, who had a gun at the bar, and he was wondering what he was up to, and then he fired off a shot.
He totally rats that dude out.
Yeah, it was weird how he mentioned it. It was kind of like, he's like, I have to say the right thing. Everybody else is kind of covering for him. This guy is the guy who shot the dude at the bar, Emmett Purcell. He's a CO.
Doesn't he really say that, like, the patrons are just drunk?
Oh, yeah.
They really don't know what's going on?
He said, oh, yeah, they're drunks. I'm a situational drinker. Simone gets on the phone to figure out where what's up with this Purcell guy, and it turns out he hasn't been to work for 2 months for sick leave. And I think Sipowicz assumes, oh, he's just a drunk. He had a pretty, like, bad bender, and now he's off on quote-unquote sick leave. They trick Purcell into thinking it's about a traffic accident to go talk to him, and as they go to him is when they have this weird thumbs-up exchange with Medavoy.
Yeah.
And even Simone's like, what's that about? And Sipowicz just holds his thumb up and goes, oh, that? That's this. And just keeps his thumb held up. Like, later in the episode, he'd say, that means Martinez is doing the right thing. Which, I mean, is its own debatable question.
I mean, whatever, however you feel, you know?
They go to Purcell's apartment, and it's pretty fucked up, and there's a lot of trash everywhere, and he is clearly not in his right mind.
Isn't he, like, moaning and shit?
He's moaning, he's really slow. It's like he... It's either he's, like, super drunk, and Sipowicz says he can't come to the door because he's drunk, because the guy said, oh, I can't make it to the door. They bully their way in there, and they ask him about the bar, which he doesn't remember, and he's not sure. And eventually, after berating this dude...
He's very harsh to this dude for, like, no reason. He doesn't even know him.
Well, I think it's because Sipowicz is assuming that the guy's just a drunkard who shot the dude and then left the scene. That's why he's being hard. But then when the guy says he has pancreatic cancer that they can't operate on and he's basically dying, he tells them, I took my medication and I went down to drink, which was a bad mix. And when they started robbing the place, I thought to myself, I can't let them do this, and I let a shot off. But I don't know if I hit anybody, and I just ran out of there in all the commotion.
Yeah, he basically, like, fires a shot off at, like, nobody.
There's this moment where Sipowicz and Simone kind of go, okay, well, I mean, what do we even do to this guy? Like, let's say he did do this. Like, what are we gonna do? And Purcell says, I don't want to die in lockup, because he assumes that he's the one that shot the guy. And Simone said, we'll get to that when we get to that. Get your medication. We got to go to the house. When they get to the house, Purcell just takes a nap in their crib.
Which is weird, because they don't arrest him. They don't really do anything.
It's almost like they were going to do the interrogation, but instead, when they got to the house, they just let him sleep it off. Kind of like, he's no good to us like this anyway, just let him sleep. And then when they do that, Gina comes up to him and says that there's a black male at Bellevue who was shot. At this point is when Sipowicz and Simone try to get it out of Gina that she's marrying James. Sipowicz and Simone are like, hey, so do you have anything to tell us? You were the subject of a lot of gestures and smiling earlier.
She lets them know.
Well, she doesn't tell them anything. She says...
she basically lets him know. She says, talk to James, right?
Yeah, she just says, you might have to talk to James about that. And he's like, and then they go at it again.
She basically lets him know.
And then Sipowicz says something that, you know, is a little questionable how cool it was to say. He says, black male with a gunshot wound, there's a once-in-a-lifetime event.
Yeah, I mean...
Which was sarcasm, because, you know, that was a little harsh, a little uncool.
I mean, are we shocked? Like, are we surprised?
It was described as three black males at the bar, so that's why they're interested in this guy. They go down to the hospital, and the guy who was shot...
They're also interested because there was multiple shots fired, but... I think they, like, only have, like, one bullet or something.
Well, no, they were told there was only one shot, and then one guy at the bar said two, and then they were shouted over that it was just one. It turns out it was two shots basically at the same time.
Okay, gotcha.
So some people thought it was one, but really it was two different shots. Most Def has a bullet in his arm, and Most Def is playing LeVon Wells. And Most Def, I mean, he's a famous face. You probably know him from some things. Right now, he's known as Yasiim Bey. He has changed his name. He's known for making music, as well as Be Kind Rewind, and a few other films and TV shows.
He was in Dexter.
He was in Dexter. He gives a BS story about some Puerto Rican guy, which made me laugh, because that's a great South Park reference.
Some Puerto Rican guy.
He says he was shot in a drive-by by some Puerto Rican guy that he didn't get a good look at. Which I immediately was like, that's hilarious, and I wonder if South Park got it from this, because that's pretty fucking funny. Sibowitz and Simone convince the doctor to let him go with them so that he could stand in a lineup and they can interrogate him. And the doctor says, as long as he doesn't start bleeding and he looks good, then he can go.
Which, like...
Yeah.
Is the doctor allowed to do that?
I don't know. My experience in hospitals, it takes a lot of work to discharge someone. And I don't know if they could have done it that fast.
It felt weird.
It was also funny because they were like, is there any way we can get him out of here? And the guy's like, well, if it's within my judgment and the patient's in no danger. And then Simone just kind of looks at him and is like, well, what is your judgment? Giving him kind of the look of like, you better let us take him.
Yeah.
And the guy says, okay, but if he starts bleeding, bring him back. And Sipowicz just goes, I like this guy's ethics.
Yeah, it's... doesn't feel right, man.
Well, speaking of doesn't feel right, they trick him into a lineup by saying the guy they're looking for was grabbing women on a subway.
This is also highly unethical, I feel like.
And he sits down in this lineup, and he even jokes and says, one of y'all is sick. I also liked his character. I think Yasiim Bey, Most Def at the time, did a good job because he was funny and pretty interesting. They have him sit in this lineup and they pretend to him that it's for this groper, but it's actually the bartender who was picking out one of the robbers.
Yeah.
And even when they had the robber, they were like, this guy shot. Did the robber shoot this guy? He's like, no, there was one shot. He shot the other guy. And then they look at each other. He's like, maybe he was shot somewhere later. And then keep him. The guy, it's really funny because after they choose him, he freaks out going like, I never touched you, you lying bitch. Like, it was really funny. Yeah. I don't want to do an impression hilarious. Of his voice.
His reaction's hilarious.
You lying bitch. Like, he just shouts that from his chair.
I also feel like, I mean, I enjoyed the character, but I also feel like he's just playing himself.
He's just playing Most Def?
Yeah, he's just Most Def.
I mean, I don't know Most Def personally, or Yasiim. I don't know him, so I don't know if that's...
Like, especially that age, I feel like he's just playing him like himself, like being like a young, like wisecracking kid, you know?
When they bring him into the interrogation room, he's like, this isn't ever gonna stick. You lied. That woman is lying. I've never touched a woman like that. Simone walks up to him and he's like, that was the bartender and we got seven other witnesses, and he does like a gang sign in his face. I don't know if you noticed this.
No, I didn't. I definitely missed that.
Like, Simone walks up to him and he says, I got seven other witnesses, and like floats him in front of his face. He's like, that says you were there, so go sit down. And I was like, what the fuck is Simone doing? Like, he's never done that before.
Yeah, that's kind of out of character for him.
They sit him down and say, you're looking at the death penalty unless you tell us who you were working that thing with, because we got a dead guy. He eventually confesses, especially after Sipowicz at one point goes, they fill you up with poison with a needle, and he shouts back, "I know how they do you," and then he gives the name. It's a great scene. The most deaf scenes are...
It's a really good scene.
The most deaf scenes in this episode make it worth watching. So if you're interested in watching an episode, you should definitely watch this one.
Yeah, he's good. He's really good.
They have him call the beeper number that he had for the two guys that he did the robbery with. And there's another great scene where he calls them to get the pickup. And they tell him he has to wait on the corner for them when he wasn't even supposed to be there. And him and Sipowicz...
Yeah, he gets all mad about it.
Because he wasn't even supposed to be involved, and now he thinks they're going to find out he ratted on them. Him and Sipowicz have a moment because he's like, it's on a bar on, like, and he says a name. Like, I forgot what it was. Like, Murray and something. And Sipowicz is like, a bar on Murray and something? You know how many bars are on Murray and something? And he's like, it's the pastime bar. And Sipowicz is like, why didn't you just say that? And then they, like, argue a little bit more.
Yeah, Sipowicz has no patience for him.
They run a sting on those dudes where they make it seem like they're arresting all three of them. And they do a pretty good job of pretending he's with them. They even slam him up against the wall, even though he's been in the hospital and probably still needs to go back.
Well, doesn't he still have the bullet in his arm?
Yeah, he still has pieces of it in his arm.
Yeah.
Highly unethical to slam him up against the wall, but Sipowicz does it anyway. After they're getting the confessions out of the guys and they're charging them, Sipowicz gets a call from ballistics, and it turns out that the bullet inside the DOA came from one of the robbers and not Purcell.
Plot twist.
Simone and Sipowicz decide they must have happened basically at the same time so that it sounded like one gunshot. One of the other robbers, who, according to most deaf, was high out of his mind, actually shot the DOA, and Purcell shot one of the robbers. And Simone says, oh, wow, that's got to be a whole load off of his mind, or that's got to be a big weight off. And Sipowicz is like, yeah, that's a load off his mind, because he's a dying man. They go to tell him, and it's just sad because the dude is, like, clearly grateful, but also kind of like, oh, wow, I avoided this. And then he even says, should I give my statement now, because I don't know how long I have left?
And yeah, he does. It's like, it's a very sad character.
And he does a great job. What's his name? Lee Hampton was the actor. He does a good job, too, of acting like this guy. There's a moment when they explain to him how he thinks there were... It sounded like one shot because the shots happened at the same time. Sipowicz sits down and hits his head on the bed, and they include the thump noise.
Yeah.
That was just like a fun little addition to the scene. Simone and Sipowicz offer to take him home, saying that they're quitting. And after that, they meet back up in the parking lot in front of the 15th, and they share a quick bro hug because they're happy to be working together again, and that's the end of the episode.
Yeah.
So gay. Did you say so gay?
Yeah, they're so happy to be with each other.
One thing I forgot to mention, the guy that played Stanley Hauser, the rapist.
Yeah.
He's a slight famous face. His name is Dewey Weber. I could have swore I seen his face before, and that's because he was the Foot Clan leader in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze.
Ooh, I'm gonna have to check that out.
Yeah, his face is very clear in that movie. He was also in Showgirls, which is something I haven't seen.
That piece of garbage in a long time.
Go Ninja, Go Ninja, Go, Kyle.
Ninja, Ninja, rap.
You know who also was in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze? That'd be Paige Turco, who plays Abby Sullivan in this show. Anyway.
That is true.
She was in 2 and 3, Turtles in Time. Secret of the Ooze, Turtles in Time. Anyway, is there anything about
which
this episode?
Which one's worse, Turtles in Time or Secret of the Ooze?
Turtles in Time is so much worse. Turtles in Time fucking sucks. Secret of the Ooze is funnily bad, in my opinion. Turtles in Time is just bad. That's okay. My opinion. That's okay. My opinion, I'm sticking to it. Have anything left to say about this episode before we quit?
So, I hadn't watched NYPD Blue since we did the last episode of the last season.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had forgotten the storyline from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and I hadn't seen it in a while, so, like, it was, like, kind of all fresh again.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I really enjoyed these first two episodes of these seasons. They're, like, pretty good.
They're pretty well made. The only thing that's kind of, like, a downer, at least in my opinion, is the stuff with Gina and James. It just seems kind of, like, so blah.
Yeah, they just got some weirdo shit going on.
Oh, man. They do. Anyway, every episode of NYPD Blue Balls and Asher Brothers Podcast is available on asherbrotherspodcast.com. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Stitcher. We're also now on Spotify.
Spotify.
Get your Spotify on. We're on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast. And we're on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod. And keep watching NYPD Blue. Thanks for listening. I've been Kirk. The other voice has been Kyle. And have a good one.
Later, guys.
Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the podcast on whatever format you're using to listen to it. The Apple Podcasts, the Stitcher, the Spotify, what have you. It's how people see the show. And more importantly, they may start watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue, which you could watch on Hulu and Amazon streaming services. Every single season of the show is up there. If you need more info just in general, there's a couple of books. There's True Blue, written about the first couple seasons. There is What Would Sipowicz Do, a collection of articles. There's Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. There's tons of stuff out there if you just need to dig into the show, because it's just that good. And we say it is. That's why we're doing this crazy podcast. Asher Bros Pod on Twitter and Asher Brothers Podcast on Instagram. I myself, Kirk, has glasses on everything. And have yourself a good one, but please keep watching NYPD Blue. It deserves your attention and your devotion. Peace.